You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, brought to you by Lacrosse Boots. Now, Lacrosse is at it again with a new line of lace-up hunting boots, the Navigator Series. And in that Navigator Series, there are two models. There's the Atlas for men and the Windrose for both men and women. To find out more information about this new Navigator Series, visit lacrossefootwear.com. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Iowa Sportsman Podcast, the number one source for hunting and fishing information, strategy and tactics, as well as conversations surrounding conservation efforts and other outdoor activities in the great state of Iowa. I'm your host, Dan Johnson, and this episode of the Iowa Sportsman Podcast starts right now. Before we start the podcast, we got to pay the bills, and that means we got to do a commercial. And today's commercial is once again by our partner at BondurantCustomFurniture.com. Be sure to go to BondurantCustomFurniture.com, take a look at the gallery that they have on their website, and flip through all the custom furniture ideas that these guys have. They do some really good work. The one thing they do that's really specialized is they take old whiskey barrels, they refurbish them into furniture, tables, chairs, artwork, lighting fixtures, you name it, they can do it. Visit BondurantCustomFurniture.com, and if you have a question, give them a call. All right, once again, this is not his first rodeo. Mr. Tom Peplinski, what's up, man?
Good morning, Dan. There's a lot up right now. We're only a month away from season opener, and
got
a lot of last minute stuff to get done here. But yeah,
so
beautiful day in southern Iowa.
Oh man, I tell you what, this weather we're having in Iowa the past week or so, in these mid to high 70s, no humidity. Man, I could get used to this.
Yeah, last two mornings actually felt like early season on bow hunting, for sure.
Oh yeah, 55 degrees, 54 degrees outside. But let's not kid ourselves, right? What's going to happen probably in early October or sometime in September, we're going to get crushed with like a week of high 80s, high humidity, even probably into the 90s, where we're going to want to go out and hunt, but it just won't even be worth it.
Yeah, it seems like it happens every year, doesn't it?
Yeah. What do they call that? An Indian summer? Where it goes all the way into October.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah, I've heard that term. Yeah.
So what's on your to-do list before the season starts?
Right now I have a couple small food plots I got to finish. I want to overseed my soybeans with winter rye. And then I got a couple trails to mow through 6 and 7 foot tall switchgrass. And then one thing I like to do every year in September is I like to go to every single stand and kind of do like a pre-use inspection for any of my industry guys that are, they're probably familiar with that term, but I like to climb them in a controlled environment when it's light out and I can see what I'm doing, make sure the stand is good, the straps are good. And I try to do that every spring and every fall right before season starts.
Yep. I have two tree stands this year that I've left in the woods. But other than that, I take them out of the woods, put them in my garage, and probably once I get back from my elk trip, I'll go through my pre-use inspection, where I check the cables, I check the screws, I check the hinges on everything, just to make sure that they're going to support me when I get up there. And it's a really good practice to do, just because you hear about guys accidentally stepping on a rusted stand or whatever, and they fall or they get hurt falling or something like that. It's always a good idea to do that.
Well, guys that use tree steps too, and I'm really going away from tree steps. About all I'll use a tree step for now is maybe to hold a chain on for the back of a tree stand or something like that. But if you're not loosening those up every year, they'll snap off. They'll get so tight in the tree, they'll snap off. So if you are using those, what we used to do is back them out every year, like in December or January, we would back them out two turns, and then we would actually leave them up so that when you got to that stand, you knew that they weren't in. You know what I'm saying?
Right, right, right.
So that's kind of something we used to do. But yeah, and the other thing I've been starting to do too is, I don't think every stand has them, but I'm really starting to try and like buy three or four every year of those, the full harness where you can strap on with a Prusik knot at the bottom and up.
Yeah. Yep. Those, I think they're called safety lines or lifelines.
Yeah. Yep. So I started with the more higher, you know, goofier trees to get into, and I'm working my way, you know, down to the, you know, what I would call less of a threat kind of deals. But
yeah,
those I definitely take down every year and I put up right before the season.
Right. Yeah. I should use those, but I move around too much where I tear up and set down my tree stands where, to the point where it's not even beneficial for me to even buy one, because you have to, in order to install it, you have to climb up in the tree stand already. And I'm only using some of these trees one time.
Oh,
you know
okay.
what I mean? So I'm a lot more mobile in my setup. So yeah. So, food plots, tree stand prep, anything else getting ready for the season?
No, that's about it. Not all my cameras are out yet. I usually start putting my cameras out maybe, you know, right around this time of year, end of August or mid-August when I start putting my fall plots in. That's when I start running cameras.
Yeah, yeah.
So I still have a couple more of those to do. And in about 3 weeks here, I'll start glassing real heavy. And, you know, it's kind of the ramp up. So yep,
absolutely. Absolutely. I can't even really think about whitetails right now. I got an elk hunt next Friday that I leave for a week. Then the second week of October, I'm heading to South Dakota for your mule deer hunt. So I may not be even hunting until mid to late October.
And, that's all
right. Right. But here's the thing though. Like your wife, all your kids are out of the house. Your wife knows, you know, hey, I don't have really any kids I got to take care of. I got three kids. My wife is starting to get a little shaky, right? She knows what's coming up. And so I can tell she's starting to get tense that she's going to be a single mom for a couple weeks, you know, so roughly around 4.5 weeks this fall where she'll be running solo. And so I got to make sure I leave. I'm doing the brownie points thing. I'm making sure she's happy, you know, making sure there's help if she needs it. So I'm not only prepping for the hunt, but I'm like prepping for me being gone as well.
Yeah, I know through the years, it definitely was hard on my wife, but I'll tell you this, I think it's a vacation for her too.
One less asshole, you know, in the house.
to some extent they get a little break too, you know.
Yeah.
I know watching kids, especially when they're little, is tough.
Yeah.
But to some extent maybe it's not always a good thing you spend every waking minute too together.
Right.
So I'm not trying to say that as a negative. It just seems to work out pretty good.
Right, right. Well, this isn't a therapy show. So we're going to get into an article that you wrote that's going to actually come out in the October issue of the Iowa Sportsman, and it's timing the rut. Now there's different perceptions of what the rut actually is. There's like science, there's what hunters perceive, there's breeding, all this stuff, right? What is the rut? And you wrote an article about it. So I would love to just kind of real high level, like what your experience with hunting this quote unquote rut time frame is.
So when I wrote the article, what I'm trying to do is help out the hunters out there that don't have schedules that allow them to hunt from season opener until the very last sunset.
Right.
Because, you know, that's 99% of us hunters. That's
right.
That's not the guys that are on TV that can do it every day. And I'm not cutting that down. I'm just saying most hunters have to balance. And we just talked about it. We have to balance our family life. We may only get 2 weeks vacation or 3 weeks vacation. You know, there's an occasional calling in sick on a Friday for a long weekend. that's what most hunters have to deal with in the fall. And so the biggest conversation I always got in at work or with people on the phone is, you know, what's the best 2 weeks to hunt, or what's, if I'm going to take a week of vacation, when should I take a week of vacation?
Yeah.
And so there's this, what science tells us is the peak breeding. And then what we all know is kind of like the lead up to peak breeding. And then we get into the second rut and all that stuff. But there's also what, as hunters, we see in the woods every fall. And the science is correct. There's no doubt in my mind the science is correct, because they base peak breeding on doe car kills, and they measure the fetus, and they can accurately predict when that doe is bred. And there's fawn survey studies in the spring in multiple states. So we know every year, year in and year out, regardless of weather, regardless of moon, regardless of all this stuff that people like to, you know, create articles about and film hunting shows about and everything. We know every year, November 14th and 15th is going to be the peak breeding for does all through the Midwest.
Yes.
And that's using thousands of does for data points.
Yep.
But where the disconnect comes in, and what I've been seeing for 20 years, actually ever since I've been 12 years old and the first time I walked in the woods, if we want to go back that far, but some years it seems like rutting activity would be phenomenal in October. And then the following year, it would seem like the rutting activity would be not till November 10th or the 15th. And every year was different. And 30 years ago, it was always, well, it was because of that snowfall we had, or we had that cold snap that got the does in the heat. So we didn't really understand, at least I didn't. There's probably people out there that did.
Right.
But we didn't understand that really early snowfall or a cold snap or, 3 weeks after a hunter's moon and all these things really have nothing to do with it. It's the amount of daylight.
Yep. The photo period throughout the day.
Yep, the photo period.
Yep.
Yeah, but where the disconnect is between the science and when you're hunting an 80-acre family farm or a 100-acre family farm, where the disconnect is when science creates that bell curve and says that peak breeding is November 15th and there's a sharp ramp up to that, you know, roughly 10 days before, and then there's a drastic drop off lasting about 10 days after. What science misses is the guy that's hunting the 80 acres may only have four adult does. Maybe he's got eight adult does.
Yeah.
So now your sample point isn't a thousand animals anymore. It's four animals.
Right.
So if you have, and I've seen this now for about 20 years, and there's some science, there's actually a forest study in Pennsylvania that I probably should have referenced in my article, just because the science is now catching up to this, that when you start looking at smaller samplings of deer, if a doe comes in heat, let's say you are on that 80 acre parcel and it's October 20th and one of your four does comes in the heat October 20th, your farm is going to experience what you would think is an early rut.
Yep.
Because that first doe coming in the heat, and we talked about this on our earlier podcast, right? Talk about that first doe gets me more excited than just about anything.
Right.
But that first doe that comes in the heat October 20th, that will actually trigger that farm into what you would think is an early rut. Because if they're the bucks on that farm, if there's a mature buck or two on that farm, that's when their rut is going to start. That's when they're cruising and chasing, and they might start spreading out from their core area a little bit more to look for the next available doe. Where a farm a mile down the road, the first doe might come in the heat November 4th or maybe November 10th.
Yep.
So same weather, same moon phase, same everything. And one farm might have an early rut, and one farm might have a traditional rut, and the next farm might actually have like a late rut. And it all depends on when that first doe comes into heat and triggers that local buck population into the frenzy that we all like to hunt in the fall. And that's by and large what the article talks about.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is crazy, because you're talking about the law of averages. Is I think what you're saying is the law of averages tells us that peak breeding is the 14th and 15th of November. However, just like you said, the does don't come into heat just at that time. They come into a heat all the time throughout that time frame, right? And I think they've had studies done where it's like even early October, within the first 10 days, there's does potentially being bred in certain scenarios.
That's
all
correct.
The way into December, where let's say a doe didn't get bred, she'll cycle through again and now and maybe even cycle in additional time. So she's bred maybe even towards the last part of December and even into the shotgun season here. So that's a huge distance between there, right? And obviously the bell curve that is the rut, right? It's real slow, peaks up all the way to the 14th and 15th of November, and then kind of and then drops down significantly, and then teeters out, right? So there's a huge time frame there. Now, I'll tell you from my experience, there are mature bucks on my farm that I hunt late October. The first week of November is a bunch of three-year-olds. Then when we get into the 7th, 8th, all the way into like the 18th, I would say, that's when additional big bucks come onto the farm. So it's like there's does being bred elsewhere, and then there two things are happening. They're done breeding those does, and they're coming into the farm, or they're staying away from the farm until the does on that farm start to breed that second week in November.
Okay.
So that's how, so for me, everybody used to say, and I used to be the same way, dude, the first two weeks of November are when you need to be in the woods. Now for me, I'm almost going to say through the experience on my farm, it's the second and third week leading up until Thanksgiving that I need to be on my farm. That's when the mature four-year-olds and older start making an appearance and start making moves in daylight. What's the rut timing like on your farm?
Well, I guess that was the point of the whole article, is it's different every year.
Okay.
So going back to when I had 1 week of vacation,
right?
You know, when I first started out in the workforce and I had 1 week of vacation and I had a family with little kids and stuff like that, and then maybe even 2 weeks of vacation, I had to pick. I had to say, and by the way, my earliest job when I had that, you had to pick in January when you wanted your vacation for the year.
Okay.
So I had to decide and pick in January when do I want to go. So I always pick the end of October and the first part of November, depending on if I had 1 or 2 weeks, something like that.
Yeah.
And it was hit and miss. So 1 year I would go out and I'd be sitting in my stand starting, let's say, October 25th ish, somewhere around there. And I would have phenomenal hunting, just phenomenal hunting. And then the next year, nothing.
Yeah.
And maybe the third year, nothing. So then I'd be, well, what do I want to switch? What do I want to do here? And then the fourth year, it would be phenomenal again. And I'm trying to figure out what is causing, why is it phenomenal 1 year, and then the following year, it's nothing. The deer aren't moving. Is it weather? Is it because last year I had, this cold front we talk about in the fall, did food sources change? And over the years, because I observed it, because I actually observed some does coming in the heat early in October, in my mind, that's what was triggering it. And once I kind of had this hypothesis, if you will, that first doe coming in the heat, you know, whether it's October 20th or the 15th or maybe even a little bit later, that was what was triggering that phenomenal activity that I was seeing on some years. And then some years I wasn't seeing it until, well into November. So I had the luxury years ago of hunting a decent sized farm, a rather big farm. It was 440 some acres, I think, but it was split in half by a state highway.
Okay.
And what was nice about that is it was one farm, one landowner. I'm great friends with him today, but it hunted like two completely different farms, because very rarely would we get buck pictures on stuff on our cameras on one side of the farm as we did on the other. It's not like it was impossible, but it was very rare. And it seemed like the doe family groups never really wanted to cross that highway. Not that they won't. Obviously, we see deer hit by cars all the time. But it really hunted like two different farms. And when I really started picking up on this is when you would hunt one side of the farm one day and then the other side the next day, just kind of depending on wind direction.
Right.
And which stands you wanted to hunt that night. And all of a sudden, one farm would light up. One farm would go nuts with buck activity. The chasing and the scraping, and when I mean scraping, I mean like more aggressive scraping. The cameras would light up with daytime buck activity, and the other farm nothing. And it might be 2-3 days later, it might be 2 weeks later. And then the following year, that same thing could happen again or completely flip-flop. And I started figuring out that the reason why this is happening isn't because of the hunting pressure we're putting on, because it was the same every year. It wasn't because of the hunting pressure, really wasn't because of the food sources or anything else. It was because that's when the local doe population, where one or two of the does were starting to come into heat, and that was triggering, you know, like what I call the buck's rut, where sure, there's a buildup. When they go hard horn and their testosterone levels start to climb, and we all know that science knows this. So there's a buildup, and then they start scraping, they start rubbing. But when that first doe comes into heat, that's what really triggers them that, okay, now there's breeding. So you might see, you know, you might see these three pointers and five pointers, these year and a half old bucks chasing does around, you know, even in September and October, and they're just kind of acting stupid. What really gets the more mature bucks, the three, the fours, and the fives up on their feet in daylight is when they know they can actually breed, and that's that first doe that comes into heat.
Right.
And what I was trying to point out is that doesn't always follow the bell curve, because the bell curve is thousands of data points.
Right, right.
Where your farm might be three data points or five data points or even a dozen, but even out of a dozen, you're going to have more of a sporadic in and out where these does are coming into heat. So I don't tell when people ask me now, hey, what's your opinion on what's the best 2 weeks to hunt? Well, if you have to take vacation, if you have to, like I used to have to do that, then it's kind of a game of odds, like you said. So then I would say, you know, what kind of conditions you like to hunt? The last week of October can be phenomenal hunting.
Yep.
But it can also be some really slow hunting too. It depends on the timing of the rut that particular year. So
yep.
To answer your question, every year is different. And that's what I'm trying to capitalize on this article is if you go out in October and you're seeing absolutely no, you know, rut type activity and your hunting is kind of slow and it almost seems like all the deer are on a bed to feed pattern and it's still October, you know, it's October 27th and 28th and 29th and you're just really not seeing anything, that's likely because a doe hasn't come in heat anywhere near your farm or anywhere near where those bucks have their home range that are around you.
Right.
So then the counter is you go to work and your buddies are saying, holy cow, they're lit up on my farm. This is what I'm seeing. I saw three bucks cruising this morning and I saw one shooter and this is going on and you're not seeing it. And it, don't think it has anything to do with you doing anything wrong. Not that you're necessarily doing anything wrong, but there's other variables that you can't control. And the one that I seem to point my finger at a lot is this timing of this first hot doe that kind of triggers that local rut by you.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense. So what I've heard before is does will come into, and I don't want to put a stamp on it and call it truth because there might be some expectations, but I heard that depending on when a doe is born may have something to do with when she comes into heat as a mature doe and when she's ready for breeding. So she will potentially come into heat the same time every single year.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. So that's why a lot of guys say when it starts to come this late October timeframe, and you have the ability to really watch what your herd is doing on the farm, watch what the does are doing really close, right? Because if there's a mature doe that is coming into heat the same time every year, you know, let's say late October or the first week of November, and you set up on those does, and more than likely there's going to be a dominant buck or a mature buck right behind her every time, that time frame, right? When she's ready, find where she's at, and then you're going to find the big boy. And this is all, you know, there's a little speculation mixed in with this as well, right? Because, you know, from what I understand is the first doe that is being bred is going to be bred by the dominant buck in that area. They're going to find each other and they're going to breed. Now, I'm sure that's not happens every single time, but if there's only one doe in heat as opposed to 20 does in heat at a certain period of time, that big mature buck is going to get that one doe because he's just going to chase everything else off. There's no other competition for breeding, right? So that 3-year-old isn't going to get to breed that first hot doe because that 4-year-old just beat him up or just kicked him away or whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that's the key. I don't know that nature actually has it set up that they actually seek each other out type of thing. But you're correct. She starts coming in the heat and she's going and she's, you know, primarily still on a bed to feed pattern and her scent is going all over the place.
Yep.
And she might even arouse some younger bucks that start doing crazy things or whatever. And yep. That's his world. So yep. Eventually he figures that out and he's going to, and yeah, I 100% agree that's probably the case. And when I started putting my finger on this, it's precisely because of that.
Yeah.
I'd be sitting in a stand doing like an observation sit on a bed to feed type pattern in mid October. And all of a sudden I'd see, you know, a doe come out and it's like, hey, this is November 15th, the way she's acting.
Yeah.
And there's two little adolescent bucks running around and a 3-year-old running around. And then there's this, you know, giant 5-year-old that is breeding her.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen this more than once. And then coincidentally, and now it's not a coincidence anymore, but all of a sudden that farm from then on would just light right up.
Right.
And sure, it might take a pause because if that's mid October, the next doe that comes into heat might be another 2 weeks.
Yeah.
But that sure is what lit a flame. That right. sure is what got it going on that farm. So right. The other point I guess I'd like to make is if you are like a weekend hunter or maybe you're the hunter that can take time not a year in advance. So you can, you know, you can call up and say maybe to your boss or whatever, hey, I want to take next week off or I want a long weekend or whatever, if that type of stuff available to you. If you see this first hot doe come into heat, if that's something you're witness of, and let's say it's a Sunday night and you're supposed to go back to work on Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday is supposed to be, you know, 80 degrees and warm and not very good or whatever, forget about the, oh, I got to have a cold front to hunt. If that's the first hot doe that's coming into heat, it's October 19th or something like that, those next 1 or 2 days in that area are going to be phenomenal. So I wouldn't waste those same vacation days 2 weeks from now because, quote unquote, that's when it's supposed to be the best hunting, because you have the best hunting right now at your doorstep. It's right there. You just witnessed it. Take advantage of it. Maybe it only lasts for a day because maybe she's already been in heat for a day. I mean, you don't know.
Yeah.
But the point of that is they're going to come in the heat when they're going to come in the heat, you know, whether it has something to do with, like you were saying, when they were born themselves, that it's kind of built into their genes that they're going to come in the heat every time, every year. It doesn't matter to me. It's when I witness that type of behavior and I see it happening, I don't care what the weather is. I don't care if it's supposed to be warm the next 2 days. I don't care if the wind is supposed to switch out of the east or whatever the different things that you go by, because that right there is going to get those deer on their feet, and especially the mature buck or two or three that you have in on your farmer in the area, they're gonna be out there. So right. Key in on it, and that doe probably has a small home range. You know, if you're in farm country in the Midwest, you know, her home range might be 80 to 100 acres that time of year. Well, that really narrows it down, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You got a hot doe that has a home range of 80 to 100 acres during that time of the year, and part of that's in agricultural fields and stuff. Holy cow, you can really narrow down where you can have a really good chance on taking a nice buck.
Yeah.
And it's mid-October.
Right. Right. So let me ask you this question, and this might help answer other questions, but when do you actually kill a majority of the mature bucks on your farm? If you were to go back 15 years or however long you've had your property, would we see a trend on specific dates or like a 3-date range where, hey, dude, I'm either killing my deer November 5th, 6th, or 7th every year?
No, I don't. It's always the vast, vast, vast majority is in October for okay. me. And a lot of it has to do with two different things. One is, well, really three. One is the classic bed to feed pattern.
Right.
And a lot of years you can't pick up on that. A lot of years they're not on their feet during the day. So you just can't take advantage of it. The second would be that classic bell curve ramp up, when you can take advantage of some decent, you know, testosterone levels increasing, where you can get them on their feet and, you know, hunt some transition food plots and stuff with scraping and stuff going on, but still kind of on a bed to feed pattern. But really the third is the first hot doe type of thing, where it lights up, and October 19th, 20th, 25th, 26th, right in that area. I don't know how many times I've seen what I felt was that first hot doe coming in the heat, or maybe it was the second, whatever it is. And there's this peak of rut activity, and I get all over it, and I'm done in a day or two as soon as I see it.
So it's like a flash in the pan.
It is. It really is. And you're not going to see it every year. So it's hard to write about something and tell hunters, you know, go take advantage of this, because you really can't every year. Some years it doesn't even take place. Some years you don't have a doe coming in the heat until well into November. So then you're wasting your time thinking you're going to get this first hot doe peak, awesome rut activity in October, because it never existed.
Right.
But when you see it and you witness it and you can get on it, you know, that's the other if you can get on it. If you can't take time off and you're a weekend hunter and you see it happen on a Sunday and you can't take off Monday or Tuesday, well then you can't take advantage of it anyways. But
right.
For the people who can, and you can jump all over it. And when I say jump all over it, what I mean is, you know, you're hunting, you know, carefully, and I always hunt carefully, so I don't want to use that term, but if, like I said, that doe's home range is 80 to 100 acres, and you see her with your target buck and she's in heat, you want to get in there. You want to hunt that deer. There's no sense the very next night sit in the same observation stand, for example, that you just sat on when you witnessed this from 400 yards away.
Right.
That doesn't do you any good, because you're 400 yards away. You want to get over there, put a plan in. Maybe it's hanging another stand, because now you're hunting that specific doe. Whatever it may be, but you get all over it.
Right, right. And that's another good thing about the rut, is that I feel like bucks have short memory. If they're actively chasing a doe, they're not, you know, they may get spooked or get busted. They're going to run away, and they're still going to be dogging that doe. And if that doe leads them back through 2 days later, it's not like early season where if a buck busts you and he's solo, he's going to be pretty wary coming through that again, but not when, you know, there's a hot doe in the mix. It's just, you know, their brains become soup.
Agreed. Yeah. Absolutely agreed. Yep. Yeah.
So it's almost like, I've been thinking about this, it's almost like there's like the rut kind of is encompassing a whole bunch of different things, right? It includes the hunters, or the perceived rut, and the actual breeding. It's almost like we would do better if we would separate them. we all know science says that on the 14th of November is peak breeding, the law of averages, right? So leading up to that point, you're going to see a lot of deer movement. And even leading up, you know, after that point, there's going to be a lot of deer seeking out their next, their, you know, a lot of bucks seeking out their next, next doe, right? So with all that said, it's almost like if we took that out of the equation and just kind of really focused on, you know, the actual deer movement and not necessarily the breeding, that we would do, I don't know, this is just a thought that's I'm creating right now. So I may sound stupid, but if we just focus on the deer movement and not necessarily the time of the year, then, or that specific date, then we would do a lot better at making decisions on where we should sit and what deer to chase.
Well, yeah. So again, it goes back to two scenarios. Right. You know, one is the hunter that can only hunt weekends and they have a fixed amount of time off that they're okay, this is the week I have. Then you're going to hunt when you can hunt and you really don't have any other options around it. And the other guy has a more flexible schedule. Maybe there's a retiree out there. Mm-hmm. Maybe there's a small business owner. And my whole point of writing this article was just because we know that peak breeding, the science tells us peak breeding is November 14th and 15th. And over thousands of does being sampled, that's correct. And it doesn't change year to year.
Right.
That local rut activity does not necessarily follow that bell curve.
That's right.
And it could change every year. So I just want hunters to know that was the reason why I wrote it, is I want hunters to know or realize kind of what took me many, many years to put together. And now that this study came out in Pennsylvania, and I apologize, I should almost have written that down, but I'm out in the field right now, but it's I think it's the University of Pennsylvania has done a radio collared deal with bucks and does and stuff like that. And yep. they're starting to point to the same thing that I have thought for a long time. And I've observed it and I've taken advantage of it, but now they're finally putting science on it that says that, yeah, we have radio collared 3-year-old and 4-year-old bucks that their rut, when their peak activity starts to skyrocket, directly correlates to when the first doe that they encounter comes into heat.
Yeah.
So I'm reading this and I'm thinking this matches 100% with what I've observed and what I've been trying to take advantage of for a long time. And it explains why 35 years ago, when I was a 12-year-old kid, why I couldn't figure out one year the rut, you know, what we perceived as the rut was October, and the next year it wasn't until Thanksgiving. And back then it was the uncles and grandpas, and well, it's because we had a snow. So we had an early snow and we just didn't know. So we tried to rationalize what was going on. Well, you know, fast forward 35 years and now I know what's going on. It's yeah. because the local rut changes every year. So take advantage of it and understand what you're observing. And one year the scrape activity seems to peak at a certain time and the next year it doesn't. And this is a lot of it is explained by this local rut.
Yep.
When the does are coming in heat, and you can write off a lot of what I used to think, well, it's because last year I had the super, super big and nasty King Brassica plant in this plot. You know, I'm making this up.
Yeah.
So, and that's when it was great. This year I only had winter rye. I got to go back to the super big and nasty Brassica plot. Well, it ain't got nothing to do with it. It's because of this.
Yeah.
Localized timing of the rut. That's what's triggering this phenomenal yep. activity in October, or you're sitting in your stand, you don't see nothing until well into November.
Yep.
Because that's when it took off on your farm.
Yep. Absolutely. I would love to see a bell curve, on the breeding by, and break it down one more level by age of buck, right? So when that peak movement happens. I think I read a study from the QDMA that like the bucks that do, like, I think 2 and 3 year olds are they actually do the most breeding out of all of the deer. So they're that real horned up buck that's going from doe to doe to doe to doe to doe to doe and just running ragged the entire rut, right? It's like a freshman in college, the first time they ever go to a bar, they don't even know what to do. They're so jacked up. and then you got like, it's that old saying, right? It's like, there's a, two bulls sitting on the top of the hill. There's one bull that wants to run down there and chase them all. And then there's one who just wants to walk and get the, you know, and get him, you know, get him his way. So, I think
that's not quite how I heard the joke told.
Yeah. Well, I had to censor it a little bit.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think it would be cool to see that by age, because it would allow people to know, you know what, I really want to try for a 3-year-old this year. I really want to try for a 4-year-old this year. Maybe 4-year-olds, through research, and this is all hypothetical at this point, move 3 days closer to that peak breeding or 6 days away from that before that peak breeding, as opposed to a 3-year-old that's moving, I don't know, 10 days before that. And a 2-year-old's moving 12 days before that. Because I've seen, just like you said, a doe that is just getting ready to get into heat. And she's not breedable yet. But there's a 2-year-old that's dogging her like she is. And he doesn't know any better. And then in the same breath, I've seen a hot doe come up, this same buck. So I sat in this tree stand like 3 days in a row because I knew eventually something's going to come through looking for this doe. Doe finally is breedable, and here comes the big boy, shoos him off in just a second. He doesn't even have to worry about this. So this buck wore her down doing all the work. The big dog just came in and he eventually took her away from me. I didn't get a shot, but took her off into a thicket. I'm sure he bred her right there. And then, he was off and gone 24 hours later. You know what I mean?
Yeah. The way I view that is this, the year and a half old bucks, and then the 2.5 and the 3.5 are moving less and less. So the year and a half have the most hyper amount of movement, this bed to feed type movement in September, October, November. The 2-year-olds are a little less. The 3-year-olds are a little less. And what a lot of hunters will agree on is this observation that once a buck gets to be 4 and 5 and 6 years old, that their core area, especially in the early part of the season, really shrinks.
Potentially.
So they have their preferred bedding, they have their food source, a water source, and they don't leave it.
Yeah.
And they just stay there. Whereas the year and a half and the 2.5 are more erratic.
Right.
So I think a 2.5 and a 3.5 are probably exposed to potentially a doe coming in the heat before the 4-year-old and the 5-year-old and the 6-year-old would, just because they're more willy-nilly. They're going over here and they're eating, and then they're going over by this water hole and they're having a drink, and then they're wandering over here because they're less of a core animal.
Yes.
So the chances of them picking up the scent of a doe that's coming in the heat and finding her are greater, just because they're putting on more yards. They're putting on, yep, they're traveling more than, yep, that 4.5 and 5.5.
Yeah.
So potentially they'll find a hot doe, and the older buck won't find it or won't find it as soon. But I think eventually they do, because that scent is blowing around, and animals can tell when there's stuff going on in the woods, and they hear this running and chasing, and so eventually they pick up on it.
Right.
But I think you're probably right. At least my logic would tell me that 2 and 3-year-olds probably do more breeding because they're putting on more miles.
Yeah.
Than these bigger bucks are. These bigger bucks are happy. Just, okay, I found my doe, I'll stay with her for as long as I possibly can and breed her.
Right.
And then I'll move on to my next one. Where the 2s and the 3s, they're just going nuts.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, man. So when are you really going to start? I mean, are you going to like watch your trail cameras and make the decision at that time to start hitting it hard? Or do you hit it hard on a specific date on your farm?
Well, what I do is I follow the classic bell curve, the scientific bell curve that says that peak breeding is the middle of November. So the early season, I hunt, like we kind of talked about a little bit. Opening day, I'm going to go out and I'm going to hunt October 1st at night, and I'm going to hunt strictly bedding to feeding patterns, probably for 2 or 3 weeks. That's the plan. And then I'll start ramping it up into that late October. But if I witness what I consider the first doe coming in heat, then that's when I go after it. Otherwise, I plan my hunt, you know, from the rocking chair with the classic bell curve. That's how I plan my hunt.
Yeah.
But more often than not, most seasons, that something happens where I'm going after it, you know, October 25th or the 19th or something like that, because something has changed.
Yeah.
You know, whether there's an area just completely tore up with scrapes and all of a sudden my camera activity, you know, went from $20 a week to $100 a week. I'm like, okay, something happened here. I need to target that area. And in my mind, it's because a doe came in the heat, and now this so-called buck rut, I guess I'm calling it that. I don't know what else to call it, but the buck rut is going to take off in this area. And it's generally like 90% or better. It's spot on. When you notice something like that, or you see it, that buck rut is just going to skyrocket. It doesn't matter if it's October 20th or if it's November 5th or whatever. It doesn't matter when that doe comes into heat and you can recognize it and see it.
Yeah.
It's going to really light up.
Right.
It's also, if you have the opportunity to have more than one farm, I used to think to myself, boy, that'd be great just to own like 1,000 acres all in one piece. And don't get me wrong, I'd still like to own 1,000 acres all in one piece. But if you were the hunter that had to choose between an 80 acre piece or 240 acre pieces separated by a few miles or something like that, I think I'd take the 240 acre pieces, because I think that increases your odds of hitting different peak activities, and you're hunting two different deer herds as opposed to the 180. That's kind of my look at it. So
yeah,
that's, I guess, just another idea that if a hunter's out there and he's thinking that. The other thing is, if you have the opportunity to hunt one or two different farms or three farms, you know, don't be afraid to jump around a little bit just so you can pick up on this.
Yeah. That's kind of what I do. Now my main farm lays real different. I honestly feel there's two different deer herds on that farm just because it's such a drastic terrain difference. But yeah, I agree, man. Sometimes if your farm's dead, you got to bounce around and get out and go try to find something else at least, because sitting in a dead zone just doesn't do you any good.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, Mr. Tom Peplinski, let me be one of the first guys to wish you good luck this upcoming season, man.
Yeah, right back at you. I'm looking forward to it. Yep, it's going to be a good one. They're all good.
Yeah.
Every season's good.
That's a fact, man. Any day in a tree stand's a good day.
Yeah. As long as everyone's safe and don't get hurt. I learned a long time ago that comes first.
Yeah, that's a fact.
You've got to be safe, make sure everything's good to go, and have fun. And then all seasons are good.
That's a fact. Well, thanks for your time, Tom.
Oh, thank you. I like doing these. A lot of fun.
And that brings us to the end of another Iowa Sportsman podcast. Be sure you guys are subscribing on iTunes or wherever you download this podcast. That means it comes directly to your phone or mobile device, and you don't have to go and download it every time. So be sure to subscribe. Also, be sure to follow along on the Sportsman's Nation website. Tons of great information there. And on their website, you can also subscribe to the magazine as well. So you got the podcast, you got the website, and you got the magazine. Different content on all of those platforms. So check it out. Other than that, huge shout out to our partners at Von Durant Custom Furniture. Go check out their website, VonDurantCustomFurniture.com. Hopefully everybody is off to a great September. Have a good rest of your week, and we'll talk to you next time.